That is a whoop whoop for the number one seed in the Western Conference, which the Lakers locked down yesterday. And LZ, it's also a whoop whoop because I just opened up the Houston Astro page while we were talking to Doug Glanville there a second ago. You ready for this? This is going to make you whoop whoop. Here it comes.
Okay. All right.
Jose Altuve is batting 158. Whoop whoop.
Damn.
George Springer is batting 182. Whoop whoop. Alex Bregman is batting 211. Whoop whoop.
Whoop whoop.
Okay. Now, here's the thing. Like we've talked about, and it's cliche and all these things, small sample sizes are the most misleading thing in the world when it comes to baseball. Jose Altuve is an MVP candidate. George Springer is an all-star. Alex Bregman is an all-star. Okay, these guys are not going to hit 200 or under that for very long. And yet here we are at, you know, the second week of the season for the first time really in any time, as far as any of us know, where these guys don't know what pitch is coming and they can't get over the Mendoza line. I love it. I absolutely love it.
Well, listen, I do not want to see good people face harm or difficult times. That's just how I am. I hate to see good people go through that. Fortunately, these are the Houston Astros. So this news is fantastic. Yeah. This is awesome. This is wonderful. This puts a nice big smile on my face. It makes me want to get a garbage can and just bang it for the hell of it. This is the kind of news that I live for. seeing you struggle and knowing that we all can see you struggle and knowing that you know what we're thinking while we all watch you struggle, which in turn probably makes you struggle even more. It is beautiful. It is awesome. It's like being trapped in your own prison. You can't get out of it because everywhere you go, there you are. I love it. I love it. I love it. Give me some more bad numbers. Who else sucks? Talk to me, Daddy.
Here's the good news if you're an Astro fan, bad news if you're a decent human being. Carlos Correa is batting 333. So he's doing all right. He's doing what you would expect an all-star to do like Carlos Correa. But I mean, let's go back to what Oral Hershiser said about Altuve the other day. Jose Altuve took a 100-mile-an-hour fastball from Aroldis Chapman and hit it over the fence like it was sitting on a tee, okay? Just jumped his ass. Just Aroldis Chapman is about the nastiest relief pitcher in baseball, and he sat there, and all 5 foot nothing of that guy hit it 900 feet into the stands, okay? And then
he's as tall as my iPad.
And then held his jersey closed as he crossed home plate because, as we all know, he's very shy, okay? Fast forward to the scandal being blown open. And everybody knows that these guys are all cheaters, and not in the acceptable way that baseball players cheat, but in a way that every baseball player realizes is an embarrassment to competition itself. He gets a fastball center cut over the middle of the plate, thigh high, and he watches it go by. And Oral Hershiser says it's a lot different guessing than knowing. You're talking about that prison that he's built for himself. This is every time that happens to him, it's going to be like, well, yeah, of course, he didn't know what was coming. So those guys got a World Series, and unfortunately, no one's ever going to take it from them. They get their rings, they get to hang the banner, they get to do all that stuff. But for those of us that know, we know that every time something like that happens, we go, see? And I will never forget. I know other people will, but I'm never going to forget the scam they pulled on baseball, and I'm going to love every minute of Jose Altuve batting 158 because it's not going to last for very long.
Oh, God, yes. Oh, God, yes. They're pressing. They know with every strikeout what people are saying about them. They know what they're saying about themselves to each other. They know that they've been exposed. And, you know, unlike the Wiz that had Dorothy, you know, this Wiz has Dusty Baker, and Dusty wasn't even there. Right. And he's trying his best to provide them with some cover, but you can't cover a bad batting average. You can't hire a good guy. Come on now. You can't hire a good guy to provide you with some PR coverage, which is what essentially they did. Got Dusty out of retirement to come in and serve as a shield for criticism. But Dusty ain't got nothing to do with you striking out looking. That ain't Dusty. That's you, bruh.
Do you know? I don't. The reason I'm asking is because I don't. I only know Dusty Baker from watching him as a player and then for watching him as a manager for the last 30 years. Do you have any relationship with him at all? Do you know him at all?
No, not personally, no.
Okay, because the reason
I've talked to him professionally, but I don't know him personally.
The reason I ask is this. Dusty Baker's done an amazing job of being an advocate for his guys. This goes back to, this is pre-pandemic, where he started lobbying early about, hey, look, baseball, you need to protect my guys. I know what's coming. I know that these guys are going to get hit like a pinata over and over and over again. You need to protect my guys. He went at Joe Kelly pretty aggressively the day after, or I should say the night when Kelly was throwing at people. And he's done what you would expect the manager of the Astros to do, which is advocate for his players. But I just wonder if in his private moments, because Dusty Baker's been around a long time. Dusty Baker was a damn good player. Dusty Baker is a very successful manager. If he's not these sons of you-know-whats, man, these guys bought every last minute of this. Every time Joe Kelly tries to tear off Alex Bregman's head, Alex Bregman deserves that. In his private moments, I wonder what he thinks about.
You know, that is a very good question because obviously – he's been in baseball a very long time. He has seen a lot, experienced even more, and has probably forgotten more baseball than any guy in his team has ever learned.
Sure.
Like, he's that dude. But he also made the choice to be the manager of that club with the information that he has. And so I'm going to make the assumption, even though I don't know him really well personally, I'm going to make the assumption that when a guy with that many chips in his pocket, who has that much gravitas in this sport, when he decides that he's going to take over for a club that's not been accused of cheating, no, cheated.
Yeah, period.
Systematically cheated. When he decides to do that, he's no longer second-guessing his decision. He's processed it, and he's like, I just want to manage again. And I'm just going to deal with this as best I can. But he's not thinking bad thoughts about his players. I think that that is where he's at, based upon the fact that there was no reason for him to come out of retirement or come back other than he was desperate to do it. And that the one club that came calling was the one club that was in the most trouble. And sometimes beggars can't be choosers. And so he's trying to make some lemonade. That's all I can imagine with him. I don't think, Travis, he's thinking these sons of guns, they get everything they deserve. I don't think he's thinking that because he's decided to side with them.
Well, you make a compelling case. And if I were sitting in a jury box listening to your summation, I think I would vote like you just said. I think I would say, you know what, he's probably not feeling that way. But I keep coming back to this, LZ. In his DNA, Dusty Baker's an old school dude. Dusty Baker does not suffer fools. And Dusty Baker played a long – you forget, Dusty Baker played a long time in the major leagues and was a really good player for the vast majority of his time in there. And was, you know, whether it's in San Francisco or Washington or Chicago, that he had a lot of success as a manager. And in his at his most molecular level, that he's not deeply offended by what they did. Deeply offended by it. Because he knows the difference between – trying to get a hit off of a major league pitcher by just reacting in that fraction of a second that the ball leaves the pitcher's hand. And he knows what it's like taking batting practice, knowing that a fastball is coming down the middle of the plate. And that's basically what the Astros did. They were taking a glorified version of batting practice because they knew what was coming. And Dusty Baker, while I'm sure he went through the exact mental gymnastics that you're describing, he knows the difference of what those guys did. And while I do want to manage and while I can reconcile it, I can get over it. Just in right before he closes his eyes at night, he's thinking, yeah, Jose Altuve deserves one in his back. I'm going to advocate for him. He's my guy now. But you know what? I can't in that moment, I can't get too upset about it because they offended everything that this game was built on.
Yeah, it's hard for me because if he was so old school and so committed to that mentality, he wouldn't have agreed to this job. You know, it would be different if they were at least – well, it would be different, Travis, if they were at least more, you know, remorseful for their actions. But they weren't. They weren't even that. So I'm like, I'm going to assume that he's done all the gymnastics and he just wants to manage again, and he's going to try and put that part of their narrative a way to cover to be looked at a different point in time.
You know,
there's
what it
no
might be?
Way he's driving into the stadium thinking these guys are cheaters and I'm leading them.
Not like that. Not quite as linear as that. But just that. Look, I they did it. They didn't get punished for it. I need a job. I want to manage. That's a really good team with some really good players. I'm going to take it, and I can live with it, I think, is one thing. Maybe it's just me because I like Dusty Baker. I loved him when he was a Dodger. I think that he's done a really good job in most of the places that he's been as a manager. And I want to think that he's on the right side of this issue. Maybe he's not. Because if you're really not on that side, if you're really like, hey, my guys need to be protected. I'm not saying that Alex Bregman should get a fastball off his helmet every night. But I'm okay with them wearing one every few nights because of what they did. That's the only, if baseball wasn't going to do it, somebody needs to. And those somebodies are going to be major league pitchers. And that's just the way it is. And I guarantee you, if Dusty Baker were not managing the Astros, his guys would be lighting their ass up.
Probably. Probably. I'm not going to even try to dispute that. You know, it's just that nobody was calling Dusty. And yeah. They had decided, for whatever reasons, that he was past his prime. Now, I can't remember. When's the last time Dusty had a losing record, a losing season?
Yeah, great question. I mean, not anytime recently, I bet.
I can't think of, you know, the last time he came out of the losing end. And so it's not as if he wasn't talented or very good at his job. It's just either their age or whatever the factors were, they decided – baseball decided they didn't need Dusty anymore.
2011, Astros, LZ, to answer your questions, 2011 was the last time. And you know what his record was? 79
was
83. He was 79.
Yeah, see, I was going to say, yeah. I was going to say he wasn't under 500 by a lot, was he? Not at all. And so this is a very, very good manager who couldn't get back into sport. And this was his one opportunity. And I think he decided, he went through it all and decided my love for this game as a manager is greater than my love for this game as a curmudgeon-y old guard who would hate this squad because they cheated.
Real quick, how many years do you think Dusty Baker's been a manager in the major leagues?
Oh, snap. Shoot. I'm going to say 22.
Really good. Really good. It's 23. This is his 23rd season in the major leagues. He's got a lifetime winning percentage of .532. He's been to the World Series, and yeah, he was out of work. Uh-huh. Makes perfect sense. Perfect sense.
Perfect
Baxter
sense.
Holmes is going to join us next. We'll get into the Lakers and that number one seed and whether or not that is important. That's coming up next on the morning show on 710 ESPN. Lakers get a win last night against the Jazz, LZ, 116-108, and it was the Anthony Davis show last night, 42 points and 12 rebounds, and you could tell last night the Lakers went into that game saying, let's get AD going. He had about 50 shots about 6 minutes into the game. He had it going all night long.
Well, listen, my man, AD, we know that when he's rolling, he's as unguardable as any guy in the league. You know, LeBron, when he's rolling, he can't be stopped. James Harden can't be stopped. Dame Lillard can't be stopped. KD can't be stopped. Steph Curry, he's in that category. Mm-hmm. The only difference is that he doesn't have a postseason to show for it, you know, and that's unfortunate because I don't think you can find too many moments of a regular season in which you can fault him for them not being in the postseason. Mm-hmm. But when you're that guy on that level, your record is yours to own. And this is his opportunity to correct that. And I'm so glad to see that he's with us as he's trying to correct that, because he's with the player in LeBron James, who not only is unselfish, but very much like all the great point guards of this sport, make sure that you have the ball where you like it and where you can be successful. There are tons of point guards who can give you 10 assists a night. And 8 of those assists had nothing to do with you, had everything to do with them, and then the fact that they needed to get rid of the ball in a certain situation. LeBron James makes sure that when you get the rock, you're in a position to be successful.
It's just hilarious to me. Genuinely, really, really funny to me that we talk about LeBron James as a point guard, because he is. you know, I know that's not the position that he occupies on a sheet of paper when you're listing who plays what, but that's what he's been his entire career. I mean, he's gonna end up being the league's all-time leading scorer unless something weird happens. He's gonna have that. He's gonna be in the top 10. He already is in the top 10 in assists. But you're talking about a guy that's 6'8", 250 pounds, and just a bull of a human being. And his greatest asset might be that he sets up other people perfectly, and he's gonna score 40,000 points. I mean, and there are people that don't like him. Great, perfect. And I'm not talking about it as a guy. I'm talking about it as a player. Come on, man.
Right. It's kind of ridiculous. And if they win a championship, and if Anthony Davis wins Finals MVP, they're going to indict LeBron James. And they're going to say little silly stuff like, Jordan was always Finals MVP. Uh-huh. Or they're going to say silly stuff like, he can't win without having a great player. Or they're going to say even really stupid stuff, which is, that's AD's ring. You can't count that for LeBron. It's like... It's so stupid. I can already hear the arguments because I'm thinking dumb and then I'm just opening my mouth. And those are the arguments. You got to start with being dumb and then make those arguments.
They're easy to discount. You know, like for a while, I get suckered into them as well because it's offensive, right? Like you're saying, it's just so dumb that you want to correct somebody's dumbness. You want to say what you're saying is ridiculous and here's why. The fact of the matter is, if you are on what you were just talking about, that, well, AD's the, okay, fine. You know what, buddy? You're right. Go ahead, live your life. Go over there. You go over, you be the guy that says LeBron James isn't an important part of this. You be the guy that says he's been dragged to the finals by the other great. But you go ahead and you live in that world. I'm going to be over here in reality knowing that he's the greatest player that I've ever seen, or certainly one of the two or three greatest players I've ever seen. And that the reason his team shows up in the finals, this would be what, his 10th time if they get there? It has nothing to do with anything other than he's the reason they're there. Period. We're done. We're done.
It's bonkers, man.
If you say otherwise... Good for you. Good for you. You go live in your world. I'll live in mine.
It's bonkers, man. He's looking at a 10th trip to the finals. It's bonkers. Like, that's not supposed to happen, especially in a free agent, in a period of free agency for the NBA where talent is constantly being shifted all around. And he's primed to take his third franchise to an NBA final.
Mm-hmm. And no disrespect to somebody like Robert Horry, who's a great player, but LeBron James is going to take his third franchise to the finals as the best player on the team every time. not just that he bounced around a lot and went to the finals with multiple teams. He's the reason they're in the finals in three different places.
He's the reason.
Yeah.
He's taking teams that weren't even in the playoffs the year before and got them in the finals.
Number one pick the year before.
I mean, it's crazy. Just... So if I'm Anthony Davis and I'm just eating and I'm not taking fewer shots, I'm leading the team in scoring. You know, I'm leading the team in rebounds. I'm leading the team in blocks. So I'm still AD, right? Like, I'm still that dude. But now I'm with someone else who can help me. He's got to be excited.
As you were saying that, Anthony Davis leads the team in points, in blocks, all these things that you're talking about, and there's no question that Anthony Davis is not the best player on the team. You know what I mean? That's what we're talking about. And that's not disrespectful to Anthony Davis. That's just a fact.
No.
Anthony Davis leads in all these different statistical categories. Who's the best player on the team? Oh, that's easy. That's LeBron. That's what we're talking about.
This is like the year where it was like Shaq and Kobe were like, I believe they were both in the top five in scoring, and it was like choose your poison. And Shaq was just in shape and just dominant as hell. And then if you get past triple teaming him, you're not quite sure if that was a success or not, because that meant the ball got to Kobe's hands. Like, that's where we are right now, where it's like, oh, we slowed down AD. Oh, snap. That means LeBron has to take over. That's not a win.
Yeah, that's good. Good for you. Good for you. Lakers last night was sponsored by Wingstop, freshly made just for you. Wings sauced and tossed in 11 mouthwatering flavors. Get yours delivered to your door at wingstop.com. Wingstop, where flavor gets its wings. So they get the number one seed. Anthony Davis has a big night. You still in the same spot that you were a couple of days ago about the Laker guard play? You still think that that's the soft spot for this team heading into the postseason?
Well, I think anyone with a pair of eyeballs can see that the opposing backcourt has been getting what they want, when they want, and how they want it. And while our guys have put forth a good defensive effort, and maybe they slow these guys down, maybe Kyle Lowry would score 40 points if they didn't play the kind of defense on them. I don't know. I just know that we've played three games, and I think all three games featured a backcourt player that dropped at least 30 on us. And I would like to think that when the postseason happens, that the defense is going to be ratcheted up a lot and that that won't be the case. But the reality is that those three guys aren't even the beasts that we have to face going forward in the postseason. We haven't even faced those dudes yet. The Dame Litters and CJ McCullers, the Westbrook and Hardens. We haven't even faced them dudes yet. And we're already giving up 30 piece each time we play one of those really good point guards or shooting guards.
So is it enough?
Concern, Travis?
Is it enough to keep them from winning a title?
Yeah, it actually it is. I think so, especially if those guards are paired with competent front court guys like a Portland Trailblazer squad is. I don't necessarily think Houston has a front court that compares to what Portland has, but certainly you got to think that if you have a scoring guard who's a willing passer, that you can take somebody who's a decent front court player and make them better than what they are in pick and roll situations if they're athletic enough.
All right, the Pac-12 players got an answer to some of their questions, but not the answer that they were looking for, so they have a new question that they're asking as well. We'll get into that coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. So the Pac-12 football players, or at least a large number of them, are asking for some things from the Pac-12. They want security in health. They want a third party. They want some money for causes that they care about. They want a redistribution of a number of the revenues. And they put out a letter in the Players Tribune a couple of days ago and basically are saying, this is how it needs to be or we're not going to play. The Pac-12 got back to them with the ultimate, yeah, that's great, but we're not going to actually answer any of your questions. The, yeah, hey, you bring up some good points. Let us think about this and we'll get back to you. Now the Pac-12 LZ is basically saying, or the Pac-12 players, I should say, yeah, that's great. Thank you for getting back to us, but you didn't actually answer any of these things. We're 2 weeks away from fall camp and would like to work to come to a resolution so that we can play this season. Every day that we don't have discussions puts players at additional risk from COVID. And for a variety of reasons, this feels to me like the first time that we may actually see a whole bunch of players opt not to play because the powers that be are not listening to the things that they want.
Yeah, I mean, the powers that be are operating like it's 2015 or something, whereas the players were still somewhat unaware of their power, I would say, and the position they really had in all of this. And if they were aware, they weren't organized. And so it's like a person here, a person there. I do believe the quarterback for the Northwestern Wildcats at one point tried to organize and unionize student athletes. And basically, once he aged out, so did that unionization process. And so this is the first time that we're seeing a real concerted effort to not just have something benefit the players who are on the field, but to set the tone and change the culture for college sports for the next generation and the generation after that and so forth. This is an incredible moment right now in which the NCAA had already seen the shark circling thanks to Gavin Newsom signing that bill. And now all of a sudden, what used to be guppies, which were the student athletes, they've become your greatest predator. And the funny thing is that they actually were never guppies. They just thought they were guppies, but they must have swam by a mirror or something, Travis. Whoa, wait a minute. Whoa, is that me? Those are my teeth? I'm that big? I'm that important that this whole thing would come crumbling down if I don't run out there and play football? And I've been acting sheepish and that I should be happy just to be here? Oh, man.
I think that is half of it. I think that them realizing that they have the ability to ask for things and the power to ask for things. And that if they don't get what they want, the threat of a boycott is real. That's half of it. The other half is, and this is, I think, the things that has changed just as much as the other. There's an audience for it now. There are, because yep. for the longest time, when college athletes would ask for anything, really, literally anything. Hey, we should be able to work. Hey, we should be able to sign autographs. We should be able to do anything. Never mind, give us a stipend, give us pay, let us share in the billions of dollars that are coming along. It was always met with the same response. Shut up. You get to go to college for free. I had to work when I went. I don't care what you say. You don't get anything special just because you're a football player or a basketball player. You should be grateful that you have a scholarship, because college is expensive, and the rest of us, we all have to pay for it. That group's still going to exist. There's still going to be people like that, but there's fewer of them than there were a few months ago. There are fewer of them than there were pre-pandemic. There are, because people are realizing, because the pandemic has brought this into play, where these universities are saying, hey, you English major, you're a music major, you're a chemistry major. Yeah, you guys stay home. You guys take your classes online. Don't come in here. This is a dangerous environment. We don't want to expose anybody. Oh, you're a football player? Yeah, come on in here. We need you. We need you. Yeah, yes, you go into that locker room that may or may not be safe, because we got to put your ass on TV. You're making us billions of dollars in this deal. We need you. We don't have this without you. So you come on in. People realize that now. So when it's get a scholarship, that's enough. It's no, it's not, because you don't have a multi-billion dollar business without me. Getting access to a chem lab for free is not an equitable trade. Me asking you to keep me safe with proper safety protocols for a pandemic that's killed hundreds of thousands of people is not a big ask. Me asking you to spend some money on some causes that I care about is not a big ask. And we've already opened the door with name and likeness and things like this. So there's an audience for it. They realize there's the power for it. And the conference can't just say, oh, look at these guys over here being greedy, because the audience for that is much smaller than it used to be.
You are so right, Travis, about the audience. People being willing to see what many of us have been talking about for a long time. I mean, you can Google my name and college sports and pay the athletes, and you'll see damn near two decades of me talking about what the what and what the hell.
Mm-hmm.
like this made no sense to me, even as a college student. When I was a walk-on, I looked around and was like, oh, wait a minute now. Hold up. Even back then as a teenager. And then as I covered teams and as I became a professional, at no point in my awareness as an adult did the system make sense to me. An entire industry built on a college tournament, the Final Four, had its own separate industry. But you couldn't find a dollar to pay those players that you were depending on to run that industry. And I don't give a damn what Tim Tebow says. I don't, because he's being stupid. If he wants to sit up here and tell me he didn't want to monetize his image when he was at Florida, and he didn't want that money, and he wanted the purity of football, you can go ahead and tell me. You've told me a lot of stuff I don't believe, and that's going to be one more thing that you can tell me that I don't believe.
Yeah, I mean, fair.
There's no damn way, Travis, you're going to convince me that you're at the height of your powers, two-time finalist for a Heisman, and all this stuff, and you could have had any marketing deal on the planet at that point, but you much rather, you know, have the career that you've had and not take advantage of the height of your powers. Man, stop.
Yeah, look, okay, look, I'm gonna live in fantasy land for a second, okay? I'm gonna accept that what Tim Tebow is saying about that is his truth, okay? I'm gonna just accept that when Tim Tebow says, you know what, I didn't want to monetize my image, name, and likeness, and I just wanted to play for the Gators because of the purity of my heart and the purity of college football. Okay, fine. I believe you. I roll. Why should somebody else have to share your beliefs? If you don't want to take the money, that's fine. Don't go to the car dealership. Don't sign the autographs. Don't go to the card show and make a bunch of money if you don't want to. If you want to keep it pure for yourself over here. If I want to go do it, right. Why should I not be able to do it? If I want to go right. over there and sign autographs and do a car dealership or any of these things, why can't I do it? Why? Because you like it. That has to be the only way. And I think that's what's changed as well, is that there are more and more people that are listening to these arguments from the players that do want rights and reasonable treatment and some compensation, and are saying, yeah, it's not out of line, because I think people understand the economics better. People understand all of these components of this so much better than they ever had before. And it's not some greedy football player who wants to go buy an Xbox or something. This is a multi-billion dollar business. You just proved it by bringing us back on campus in the middle of a pandemic to play football so they can put it on TV. But you're telling me I don't deserve in any of this money? Even the most hardened anti-athlete person sees that and goes, yeah, well, that's a bunch of BS. I mean, that doesn't make any sense at all.
It's a bunch of BS, man. Yeah. It's a bunch of BS. I mean, you guys all know, listeners know, I went to Western Michigan University. I'm very proud of it. We faced USC. P.J. Fleck came out, had everybody talking about rowing the boat, and he was able to take that and elevate himself into a higher-paying job at Minnesota. And I'm very, very happy for him. But I'm not going to let it slip either that he had a lottery pick on that team, as well as other guys who were drafted on that damn team, something that we never get at Western. And the only reason why we got Corey was because some ish went down at the school he was supposed to go to. But Corey wasn't able to cash in on being the most popular and iconic Western Michigan University Bronco. He wasn't able to sell cars in Kalamazoo. He wasn't able to have his own little menu item in Kalamazoo. He wasn't able to maximize anything about being on that squad that had his great run and face up against. He had none of that. None of that. But you know who did benefit? PJ.
Right.
PJ. Come on, dog. What is we doing here?
Yeah.
What are we doing here? It's blatant in our faces.
The Pac-12, the letter and the comments and their organization on this, because this does not seem half-baked. This seems like they've thought this through, and it seems real that if they don't get what they want, they're not going to play. Because it's an easy walk away now, too. To walk away in the middle of a pandemic is not just give us our money or else. This is hey, look, this whole thing is broken, and now you're asking me to risk my life potentially? Nah, I'm good, man.
Right.
Until we can talk about this like reasonable, thoughtful people, I'm good. You guys go do your thing here in the middle of this. I'm going to wait over here until you get it sorted out. Everybody understands that.
Yeah, like I know you think, some of you think, especially you down in the OC, because we see the numbers, road is not real. Well, I'm just saying that the road is not real. Some of you are using your mask as like a lip guard. You know, some of you only cover the bottom lip, not even the top lip. You just cover half your neck with it.
Makes your face sweat.
I'm sure it does. You know, I'm sure a ventilator around your face would also make you sweat, but that's another conversation.
Yeah.
But I will just simply say this. There is a deadly virus going around that we have no vaccine for. And you're asking teenagers, kids, to go out and risk it all for these universities in order to keep their economy going, the economics of the campus going. And then you're going to try and tell me that those very same kids aren't capable of getting paid. They're amateurs. Right. They're children. Uh-huh. They're students. You got a college scholarship. That's good enough. Man, stop it.
What are you, some sort of leftist wacko, LZ? that doesn't make any sense at all.
Listen, I'm going to speak to you in the most right wing of ways. That is just pure capitalism, baby. That's just pure money. You should get paid what you're worth. Period. Amen.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Crosstalk with George coming up next. What did you say? 84, LZ? Is that when this was top?
1984, this album reached number one for the first time and then spent 24 weeks at the number one spot. Crazy, right?
It does 24 not seem, weeks. I'm trying to think. 1984 would be, that's 16. That's 36 years ago. That's a bummer. That kind of takes some of the fun out of that.
Is 84 the greatest music year in our lifetime?
Oh, you're I mean, we're talking about that than I am.
Well, I mean, think about the albums that we're just talking about. Thriller, iconic. Born in the USA, iconic. Purple Rain, iconic. Freaking even Footloose, iconic as far as record, as far as soundtracks is concerned. And then you have like this hiccup with, you know who, but it's, or I should say, you know, Huey, but I mean, those four albums alone. Oh, thank you. Those four albums alone are on people's top 10 list of greatest of all time. And they all came out in 1 year.
Yeah.
That's all hit number one in 1 year.
You know, Kenny Loggins had a run too, where all he did was soundtracks. He had Top Gun. He had Footloose. He had a song on Caddyshack that was a huge hit. You know what I mean? Like he was the king of the soundtrack for the better part of the 80s. He was on every hit movie seemed to have a Kenny Loggins song or two.
Dude, I was such a huge Kenny Loggins fan. It was unhealthy. Like I knew all the words. I actually bought his music. If you can believe that, you're talking about the soundtracks. I actually bought his own music that weren't affiliated with music. For some reason, I just thought he understood. He understood what it took to make a really good pop song. And he was very comfortable making pop music. And I was just all in, man. I thought it was great. What happened to Purple Rain?
I don't know. Is George here yet? Nope. Oh, no crosstalk today. Well, then you can spill the beans, LZ, that Huey Lewis was our other guy that was in the number one spot in 1984. Like, this is one of those, one of these things is not like the other. You've got Michael Jackson, Prince, Bruce Springsteen, and Huey Lewis. It just doesn't seem to quite fit. Lewis.
Yeah. And the news. Don't forget about the news.
Oh, yeah, the news. Absolutely.
Which is crazy because I can't think of a single member of the news. Can you think of anybody from the news?
I'm guessing there's somebody have names? Else with Huey Lewis's cousin or something like that. I don't know. Something like that.
Cousin Huey or something? I don't know. I do know that Party Puppet Man says, LZ Granderson, don't sleep on Huey Lewis in the news. We used to bump I Want a New Drug in the Hood back in the day.
Look, well, here's the thing. It's not iconic like those other ones that we're talking about. But you hear this song, you hear I Want a New Drug, you hear a handful of Huey Lewis songs, they're not terrible. They're just not legends like the other guys.
Right. Right. I mean, they're not terrible. And I like Huey Lewis. I'll still do Huey Lewis in karaoke. His range fits right in perfectly with my lack of range. So I feel comfortable singing his songs.
Is that the key? Is that the knowing the range of the artist that you're going to try to cover? Is that the key to karaoke? Because I have never done it, and I'm pretty certain I never will. But in the event that we get to a situation, I need to know what I'm getting into.
So put it this way. Before I had my node situation with my voice that changed my voice forever, I used to sing in a garage band, for one. But I also used to do like Bono, peak Bono for like karaoke. And Bono's range.
You don't want to do that.
was bonkers. But that was my comfort zone. Like my voice was like that. After my node situation and my voice change, straight Barry White, baby. Barry White. Like, I tried to sing With or Without You one time after my nodes, and I was like, those notes are high. What is he doing singing up there? Let me get down here.
I don't know anything about music at all, but I know that I'm not trying to sing a Bono song. I mean, that's a non-starter, right? That guy can get way up there like that. I'd be better off trying to do a Michael Jackson song with a hee-hee and all this. Yeah. I'm not getting anywhere near Bono. Forget that.
Oh, man. I used to do Desire, Where the Streets Have No Name, With or Without You, like all those songs. I used to love doing those songs in karaoke. But then after, my voice changed, it was Barry White and Huey Lewis, some Trace Adkins, Josh Turner. Geez,
that's really deep. Trace Adkins, that dude makes Barry White sound like a six-year-old. I mean, that guy's way down there. That's crazy. So is it okay if I check in on you a couple of times tonight just to make sure you're doing okay if the Dodgers fall behind? I'm a little worried about you. I've got to be honest.
No, I'm okay. Check on me, though, if they lose. Okay. I'm not one of those. I don't freak out any by any. I freak out at the end result. So if we lose tonight in San Diego, you should not just call in. You should send someone to do a wellness check.
Deal. You got it. All right. We'll talk about that Dodger win tomorrow morning. We'll start it off at 6. We'll see you then on the morning show on 710 ESPN. Sedano's.